Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I am so happy to be here today because, well, first, I get to hang out with really cool people. But second, because if I'm here and we're all here, it means I have sorted out whatever ridiculously stupid and still unknown audio problem I was having. Audio works. And do you know why? Right. Neither do I. It's just suddenly working. Yay, technology. Anyhow, that might be a mystery. But what's not a mystery is that these people are actually as cool as they appear. No mysteries there. Ian, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Last week, I was watching the second episode of Dune, which, well, not quite. That was at midnight. That was really good. Interesting side for the techies amongst us. They were having a mare of a time with their projection gear, which is now all laptops and a server that they download the movies to, the guy was telling us. And the one that was in the main screen where we're going to see the film originally completely fell over. So they moved us all to another screen and got everything set up. And he was wandering around with his laptop and he said, "That's all right, I'll skip through the adverts for you. You don't have to watch those now." So we skipped all the advertising and stuff and the trailers and things. So yeah, and then he got us going and we watched both movies and I can honestly recommend it.
Did you tell them to turn it off and turn back on again?
I was poised to, but I was beaten by somebody else. It was one of those. I have to say, I do recommend June 2. It was the easiest way to tell a complicated story with plots within plots within plots. And keep the narrative going. They did a very good job.
Nice.
Only if you like Dune, I recommend it's worth a visit to the cinema.
I am looking forward to it. I'm still not going to movies and theaters, so I will just have to impatiently wait for it to show up on streaming.
Yeah.
And
I still enjoy a visit to the cinema. Our one was a chain in the UK called Everyman, which is really rather nice. They have sofas in the auditoriums rather than the classic chairs, big armchairs, two seat sofas, blankets, and an at seat service as well. It's just a really nice way to watch a film, and they really did look after us that night. There was freebies and things while they were getting stuff sorted out. So they did a good job because we were in there for 8 hours, so 4 hours or so. Two hour movies. So 4-6 hours sort of thing.
Nice.
Very nice.
It sounds a little bit like a independent theater that's in Fort Collins, so an hour north of me. And it's multiple screens, I think they have like three screens, and it's all like couches and comfy chairs for each screen. And they even have like little coffee tables and stuff. And then as part of the same building, there's a restaurant and a bar, and they even have a big setup so they can do outdoor movies and anyhow, all this stuff. So you can go and order your food and drinks, and you can sit and just eat there in the restaurant part, or take it right into the theater and find your place in your comfy chair or on your couch and watch the movie while you eat your dinner.
Yeah,
and have your no, drinks.
Yeah, exactly. That's what this chain does, isn't it? It's very successful. It's a nice way. If you've got a long one, it's a nice way to enjoy it.
Nice.
There's a lovely, also, we've got quite a few little community cinemas, and occasionally I've ended up when I've been traveling in them. And there was one where the room was probably six rows deep. And it was just a little thing. And I watched The Death of Stalin then. That was fantastic fun.
Nice.
And then there was another place we went to watch the last of the Bond movies. We were away at the time, and they had an interval, which is a nice thing that we don't get anymore in the UK. But they had an interval half time. It got halfway through the movie, they paused everything. Said, "Now stop! There'll be ice cream. There's ice creams in the foyer and everything." Oh, it was lovely. It was really, really enjoyable. Really enjoyable.
We have a like I mean, in Vienna, we have a ton of really old buildings. And we have one, like, it's actually part of a chain, but it's a really nice old building. Like, they beautifully redid it, and you're sitting, like, kind of in a cellar almost. Like, it's like this big room and, like, old brick everywhere. And they I think they've even preserved some stuff from the original building, but there's artwork and so on. It's really cool. It's called Artis. So, but I think it's part of a big one of the big chains for some reason.
So what I'm hearing is, as I travel around the country and around the world to see my friends, we can go to some really cool theaters.
We should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes. So Tom, no pressure. You need to find, actually, I know there's some cool stuff.
Oh, there's a couple. Here. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to come to the Stanford Theater for the old movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great experience. It's old school chairs. You know, everything is old school. You get the organ that pops out of the stage.
Oh, I'd like that would be.
Yeah, it's a really fun theater.
My wife au paired in the States long, long ago in the 90s. And she always told me about things like there's the cheaper theaters that run all the older movies still on the screens. Dollar, you know, the dollar screenings it was at the time. I don't think that thing still exists.
No, not so much.
But that I just think that was a really nice idea. And I would like that. You know, there's a thing, I didn't see that. I didn't see that first time around, but it's out. I can go and see it for a couple of dollars. Yeah, I go. You know, that would surely get a bit of footfall into cinemas showing older films. Experience it in the big screen again, you know.
Yeah, I miss those old second run movie theaters. I don't think they really exist anymore, but they were super cheap and they would be, you know, three or four months after the first run.
There are some, like Vienna has, like, they're mostly the independent, like, right. This year, and in here, I think in Germany as well, they're the independent, like, theaters, the smaller ones, and they show, like, independent films, but I think just to get people in and, like, show something that people might actually recognize, they show, like, as you said, like, the, like, 3, 4, or 5 weeks in, they show the big blockbusters. Not everything, but, like, quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, our indie does occasional things where they'll do a run of classic horror or a run of classic something or other else. And if you remember, there's normally some quite good stuff there if you can get to see it. So there's always things like this is getting better. You're not just stuck with let's go and see the latest blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Or don't go and see Madame Web, as I've learned from just about everybody who's been to see it.
Yeah, apparently including the cast.
Yeah, I want my life back. It's not, I got, there's an hour, 2 hours of my life I'm not getting back there. Most of what everybody said to me, I've been to see it. So.
Yep. When I first went to college, I ended up at this smaller college. It was in a farm town. It's where my parents had gone, and they were like, we'd really love you to go to the same school we did, and turns out that was a mistake. But the point is, there was a theater in town, and the same theater that had been there forever. And everyone knew when you went to the theater, and as soon as the lights went down to start the movie, you picked your feet up and put them on the seat in front of you, on the seat back in front of you, and slid down so that the top of your head really wasn't much above the top of your chair, because when the lights went down, the mice started running all around. if your head was down, you were less likely to now the bats, they wouldn't actually fly and get caught in your hair, because that's an old wife's tale. But you're keeping your head low, so that as the bats are flying around, you didn't have this whole distorted thing at the bottom of the screen where the bats are flying above everyone's head. So they tended to fly up higher in the room, so it didn't it didn't distract as much from the from the movie. Good times.
Must have been really shitty movies that you watched there, because I wouldn't have been able to focus on the movie at all. Like,
it was difficult to focus on the movies. Yeah. Yeah. And some people, they're like, you don't go to the Lamoni Theater for the movies. You know, you're going there to make out. And I'm thinking, there's nothing exciting about making out when you have to keep your feet off the floor so mice don't run up your legs.
No.
Oh,
not,
dear.
Not a chance.
Tom, how was your trip?
My trip is great. I'm glad to be home, but it was a fantastic trip. I went to Egypt and mostly Egypt and Istanbul. And I'm still coming down from being overwhelmed by the history. If you ever get a chance to experience Egypt, I highly recommend it. It was a wonderful trip.
Awesome.
Yeah, from an American perspective, that's a lot of history, I think.
Yeah.
A lot, yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you get to the bazaars in Istanbul? The spice markets, because they're amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
so
I'm
much
not
color
much of
and
a...
smell and everything.
Yeah, I like that part. I'm not much of a shopper, and to be honest, we were walking through the bazaar and we were there for about 15 minutes, and I said, you know, I'm just done. I've had enough.
I could have spent probably like days in there. One of my favorite places in London is actually this Camden Market is one, and
yeah.
Borough Market mm-hmm. is the
Borough.
Other.
Borough. I was going to say that you were going to mention Borough. Yeah,
those two, and I can spend days there, like just browsing around, looking at all the vendors and talking to them and all of that.
Well, the Cairo Market in the old Cairo was more fun. It was more kind it was less sort of organized and it was more fun people. The Istanbul was a little bit more well-kept, you know, it was more like a shopping mall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I get
it. It's completely that. I mean, if you want to watch upsell and salesmanship.
Oh my God, yeah.
At work, just stand and watch the spice vendor selling their wares. It's amazing. They hate me because I just don't want any. No, it's all right.
I did buy some spices in Egypt I brought home for my wife.
But yeah, it's crazy.
Which made my luggage smell very interesting when I opened it when I got home. It was worth it.
I want to know what the guys at customs were thinking. They're like, oh, what is this?
I was a little bit worried about how the dogs would react to my bag, but I didn't have any problems.
Sneezing, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I'm glad you're back and glad you had a great trip. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Came back from Lisbon last week, like Saturday morning, like 1 a.m. ish. I think I was back. Mm-hmm. It's been fun. Had like a lot of work this week, trying to book my next two trips and failing at it, and struggling with the stupid airline websites and service centers and chat spots and all of that, and none of it is working properly. It's like the biggest crapshoot you've ever seen. You would think like big European airline, like they should have their tech down, but nope, not a chance. It's not working. Like it's just throwing me, like when I want to pay, it's just throwing an error. And nobody seems to be able to help. But this, I'm used to that. Like they have an app for their in-flight Wi-Fi. I mean, yes, we're getting that finally in Europe. I know in the US it's been forever. And whenever I want to log in, I just get a 500 error. That's it. For like probably 2 months or so, it's been that way. I've reported it and never even got a response. It's like, yeah, okay, it's just broken. So great. Doing good. I'm looking forward to my weekend.
Well, awesome. And we've chatted previously, so I know you had a nice trip, but I'll for the sake of the show, how was your trip?
It was amazing, as always. Like really great people and a lot of fun. Broke a nail like at the airport when arriving, of course. It's perfect timing, as always. No, but it was a really good trip. I really enjoyed it. We walked every day with my boss. I walked like from the hotel down to the harbor. It's about an hour 10, hour 20 or something, and then we walked back up the mountain. So
nice.
Another hour. Nice. So two hours, 2.5 hours every day we just walked. Just, I mean, after a full day at the office, it's literally what we need. We skipped lunch often. We were like, not very hungry, but let's walk. So that was fun. Yeah, nice. And my boss got, funny story. My boss got offered like cocaine, like all the time. Like that one
does
day.
Does he look dodgy?
I mean, he, I mean, he's like, he lives in Ukraine, like part-time and part-time in Germany. He has like braided hair, and he kind of looks like the type of
He fit
person
the
who
profile,
you would. They never talk to me, but to him, they were like, "Oh, you want a
huh?
drink? You want Coke? You want like whatever?" And he's like,
That's
"No."
funny.
Yeah,
That's
that was
funny.
funny. It got like some people really wanted to sell him Coke, and he really didn't want it. So,
Did he have like a look they were picking up on that said, wow,
I
this guy's
guess,
really stressed and needs
yeah,
some
maybe.
coke?
I mean, I've had that with another, like a friend from the US. Like whenever we were in Frankfurt at the, like when you exit the main train station in Frankfurt and go towards the city and towards like the big bank buildings, whatever, you kind of go to the seedy part of Frankfurt, and like if you walk, and yeah, he would get offered Coke all the time, and I looked at him like, yeah, you just look like the typical American, like that would buy that, like the Wolf of Wall Street type of person, basically. So, and he was like, yeah, but he never did. It's not his thing. But so that was fun. I was like, I had a great time there. I was laughing. I was like, oh, you're getting offered coke
Clearly,
again.
very friendly town.
Yes. Yeah. As I said, never happened to me, not even once. Like they just look at me and they leave me alone. Like there's all like in the, it's like the downtown area as well, the tourists are. So there's all those restaurants, whatever, and they have people standing outside and kind of trying to lure you into their ridiculously expensive restaurants probably. And they've never bothered me. I just walk past them and they never even ask. So I don't know. I don't know what it is about my boss, but he gets asked all the time.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, he probably looks very German. I don't know.
Yeah,
Could
well,
be.
there you go. All right. Well, since we're here and it's the big show, right? It is Thursday, the big show. Yes.
I think so, yeah.
We should do some stories.
Yeah, we've already, I don't know, 20 minutes in, we haven't done a story.
Yeah, well, you know. But hey, Ian has a story, so
I do.
there we
I
go.
do. It's an interesting one, actually, this. We've got Microsoft on one side and the New York Times on the other in a lawsuit. There, New York Times are upset that Microsoft has been trawling the back catalogue of the Times and using the data therein to build their large language models for the AI, along with OpenAI. And so they're trying to get some royalty or trying to get some compensation from Microsoft for the use of all this data without permission. Microsoft are going, no, but it's like VCRs in Hollywood. No, just no, it'll be all right. And I don't know what anyone else thinks about this, but I kind of think, no, you probably do need to pay Microsoft for something going on
Yes.
here. Not Microsoft, don't pay the Times for some attribution for access to their data. This is a little so there's this. It's so both OpenAI and ChatGPT. I mean, to be fair, the Times are having none of it, and the responses from them was going, no, it's not. I can't see how we're comparing it to a VCR. It doesn't make any sense to us.
Well, here's how you compare it to the VCR. You make a copy of a movie, and then you duplicate that 100 times and sell those 100 copies.
Right.
That's what this is like.
Yes, which is illegal.
Which,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And
Yeah, if you weren't selling it wouldn't be legal, right? The sort of
yeah.
personal use thing. But
I think
I
there's
just
even, I think even there's a limit if you're distributing it to like to too many people, too wide, I
Yeah.
think you cross the
Sure.
line, something.
So I don't know about the full legal side of this, but it just it you know, to take somebody else's work and to make money from it just doesn't
Yeah,
feel right.
doesn't
Yeah.
sit right, does it? Regardless of what you're doing with it, if you're using it for private testing, okay. But if you're going to then make it available to the public, then
Well,
you're potentially
I
going
mean,
to get benefit from it. Not so much.
it honestly, it is a bit, it is a little bit a difficult story. I mean, on one hand, you're absolutely right. Like if like looking at it, you say, okay, if like New York Times does some work, publishes that, Microsoft uses it and uses it commercially. So clear cut. You have to pay for
yeah.
it. On the other hand, there's this whole argument about, well, it's, I mean, the VCR stuff is just like legal BS. Like, I don't think that's going to stand.
Oh, straight up. Yeah.
It's nonsense. Yeah. It's nonsense.
But the, like, there is an argument about what you publish publicly. We can say, well, you like any, like, if it's behind a paywall, different story, but like what you publish publicly and anybody can read and anybody can use. There's, I mean, I don't know what the legal argument or the legal side of that is, but you can at least make an argument, say, well, it's public, so it's kind of like I plastered the street with it and anybody could read it and take photos and do whatever they want with it. You can argue that, as I said, whether that holds up, different story. Whether that's correct, also different story. But it's public, right?
Mm. So
there's two sides to this, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that they're public,
but... Oh, go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
Well, I just think the fact that this stuff is behind paywalls is, as Patrice points out, makes a big difference.
Yes. Yeah, it that's where you
makes
cross
the case a lot clearer.
Yeah.
That's very definitely where it's, I would say, pretty clear. Like, I mean, if it's behind a paywall, then the intention is that you pay for it.
Yeah. Right? You're intended kind of that way you wish.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's a company that doesn't have a dollar or two in the bank, is it?
That's true. Yeah, but I mean, how did they get there?
By dodging things. And then thinking, oh, well, we'll suffer the lawsuit if it comes. Yeah. I guess that's what they're going to do. They will end up paying. I can't. I'm surprised.
Yeah, they're in the find out stage, right?
Trying to say that they're at the stage of poking and seeing what they can get away with it or not at the moment. That's why they're trying to dismiss it out of hand, apparently, to say, "Oh no, it's like the VCR. No, you don't need to worry about that." I mean, they are trying it on massively.
Yeah, I mean, it's their lawyers' right to try whatever they want.
Oh yeah,
Microsoft pays for it, so.
Yeah. So here's the case that always gives me a problem in arguing against OpenAI using that kind of information. Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm a researcher and I want to write a historical, you know, a book on history about something that happened in the 19th century. So I do a bunch of research. I read a bunch of books. I read a bunch of documents. I go to libraries and get information. I synthesize all that information and I write a book.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different than AI scraping?
The difference is that you can take the content and create new thoughts and ideas based on what you have read.
Right.
Whereas an LLM cannot. So what it can do is plagiarize. And at best, it can take.
It's not original work.
Yeah, it's not original.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure on that one. It might be original work, but the difference is if I asked you to basically word for word, 100% correct, repeat the original content that you've read and that you've used, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Right.
If you ask an LLM the right question, it will regurgitate the input, the original content. And it's like it's super easy these days. Like it's been proven over and over. Like people like with some very simple questions, they can get the original content out. And that's how they figure out that like what is the source material.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference. I wouldn't say there's no original thought in LLMs because it's part of that. They kind of do. Yes, they're parrots. Yes, they repeat a lot of things, but they do it in a creative way, and that's why it's useful.
Well, and the other difference is if I wrote the book that I described, I would have a bunch of footnotes in the back mm-hmm. about what all my sources were. I don't get that from ChatGPT.
And not every book does that.
That's true.
Scientific documents, yes, 100%. But if you write like I don't know. Write a book about Elon Musk. There's not a like table of like your sources at the end.
That's true.
Yeah, even though you had them for sure. Like, but the difference is you wrote something that you created basically at the end. Yes, you took the other stuff as input, and yes, that informed what you were writing. But it's your words that you created, and you cannot go back to the originals.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be possible. I don't think you would even be able to, if I asked you even one article, you would be able to create, recreate, basically, from nothing, right. Like just from a question, basically.
Yeah, now, these questions that we're asking right now, and the vagaries about, well, when is it okay, and when isn't it okay to use someone else's content, and how the final product is created, mm-hmm. and what it says. I mean, for some people, it feels very clear cut on either side, but the reality is it is kind of very muddled right now. And yeah. lawsuits like this are going to establish the framework for what is mm-hmm. and is not acceptable when training LLMs or other AI systems.
Yeah. I mean, the question, what is original, is probably as old as we have been creating anything. Like, I mean, back in the day when, I don't know, books were copied by hand and then maybe someone added something. You mm-hmm. could argue, was that legal or not? Like, and I'm pretty sure someone argued back then about that. And I mean, definitely since the 19th, 20th century, that happened more and more. Like, it's about, okay, are you, I mean, even with humans, am I allowed to just straight up copy something that you've written, Jeff, and then like put it in my own, whatever, my own article, my own paper? And there's rules for that these days, and they came from progress and from time. The difference is that we now, I mean, till this day, it was mostly human beings doing it. So there were some human limitations. And it mm-hmm. was usually pretty easy. Well, sometimes not, but it was often very easy to tell if someone like really stole something, or it was just an idea that they may have used. But with LLMs and with AI, I think in general, you're getting now to the point where our legal frameworks are not set up for it. We have copyright yeah. laws and all of that. We do not have to, they do not 100% apply to LLMs.
No, they can't comprehend.
We don't know if they apply. That's the problem.
Well, they can't comprehend the implications of the technology. You know, others have talked about, mm-hmm. you know, when the printing press came, it was kind of a similar thing.
Audio recordings, video.
Cassette recording, video mm-hmm. recording. Every time it happens, it creates this huge disruption in sort of the legal mm-hmm. framework. But I think that one of the differences here is this is just exponentially more powerful, you know, compared to a cassette recorder, you know.
Yes. The adoption mm-hmm. also is much faster.
And the adoption has just been astronomically fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so much faster than anything else. Yeah.
So I mean, will we eventually figure out how, like, legally what is okay and what is not? Yeah, sure. Either by, like, courts making decisions about things, or by lawmakers they're doing their job for once and writing laws that one way or another, whether we agree with them or not, will like provide a framework, hopefully.
And it'll take a long time, right? Think about when VCRs came out in the 70s, and it wasn't really until towards the late 80s that all the legalities was really worked out.
Yeah, but as I said, like the time frames are like much accelerated.
Yeah.
Like the EU is already working on like a new AI law. I think there's even a couple drafts already, and it makes sense. I don't know where we'll end up. I think I honestly also think we have bigger problems than that.
Yeah.
Because the bigger problem is that with all the stuff we're creating right now, we can basically fake a human being pretty well. At this point, even it's not perfect, but it's getting better and better. And unfortunately, that means that anything like everything we've built around that, like proof in courts about whatever legal cases of some sort, where it's like, oh, this person wrote that or said that or signed that or whatever, all of that is meaningless because you can't prove that this wasn't faked. Or maybe today you, in some cases, still can if you're lucky, but give it a couple of years, like, forget that. That is a bigger problem for us.
Yes. And for the average person, they don't know what to look for anyhow.
No.
So it's easier to trick someone with an mm-hmm. AI-generated video.
Already happened.
The whole
Joe Biden, there's no election on Tuesday thing. What happened? Months ago,
the phone calls.
Yeah. Was it perfect? No, but it was good enough.
And it wasn't even an AI specialist that created the recording. It was a comedian that had been hired, not because he was a comedian, but because someone knew him. It was like, hey, can you make this? And we'll pay you for it. He's sure. And then he sees how it's being used. How could he not know that was going to happen? And then he came forward and was like, no, I made that.
Yeah. So that's honestly, I think, yes, this the copyright thing and the business side of things are important. And I mean, this is a purely business thing, New York Times versus.
Yeah, Times. this is purely
it's that. Not about us. It's not about any of that. It's just about money at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. It's always which about is fine. Money. Yep. Speaking of money, Patrice, your story.
Yeah.
This was a big shock to me. I didn't know about this until I clicked your link.
Okay, but I want to give a honorable mention to a story first.
Okay.
Hello, German man, like he got 217 COVID shots in the last, I think, 4 years. Well, yeah, three years ish. I think there were months where he got like 48, so more than two a day. And yeah, nothing happened, by the way. He's neither more
private reasons.
It's like neither more immune nor anything else. So I just wanted to mention that because it's a funny, it's not really a tech story, but it's a funny story, like 217 vaccines. And I think now they finally figured it out. So
wait, how could he keep going and get
well, you just vaccines? Go to another doctor, like just keep going.
Okay.
Totally doable.
It would be super easy to do here.
Yeah.
You just
it's not that different here.
Yeah, you just show
as
up
as long as you pay for it, who cares?
Yeah. Show up at one of the clinics and get your shot and go to another clinic because their systems are communicating.
So you can do two a day because they have two arms, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the only hard part about getting that many shots in that short of time is you have to be stupid enough to want to do it. And
yeah, apparently that would be the hard part. Had a lot of time.
Well, you know how it is, don't you? If you can think of something, there was someone stupid enough to want to do it.
That is true. But
now, was he doing it because he was being stupid? And I'm genuinely asking. Or was he doing it because he was making a statement trying to show that vaccines are not dangerous?
I have not seen any official statement why he did it. Like it's all speculation.
I mean, that is interesting. Did he do it just to go and go, stop with the anti-vax bollocks now? It's all right. Honestly, vaccines are fine.
Yeah. But research, the funny thing is researchers are now super interested in him to just, I mean, yes, it's only one person. So yeah, the output is very limited. But it's still interesting to see, like, is there any differences to most other people? And apparently there's not. Like, you're not more immune or anything like that. It's seems to be 217 aren't really needed.
And now I'm not a doctor, although I have played one on stage once. But it seems to me, with the way vaccines work, once your body has been programmed to recognize and fight whatever it is, then that's it. It's not like you. It's
make it 10 times stronger.
Your body to know it more.
That's not quite like that, because I mean that's why you have things like boosters and so on. It's not just because the virus is like change and mutate and you might have to adapt. It's also because your immune system needs a refresher every now and then. It's a skill, or like something you train. You train your immune system to recognize.
But you don't need it twice a day.
You do definitely. You it's like I mean, if you're playing whatever 14 hours, you're playing tennis 14 hours a day. I think there's a limit on how good you can get. Like at some point, you're like, okay, you have just reached what's doable for you.
All right, so we've just established why I have only portrayed a doctor on stage, and I am not in real life.
Yeah, but the real story I actually wanted to talk about is shocking news on the camera side, because Nikon is buying the cine camera specialist Red that a lot of people, I think, know from like movies and so on, like the ridiculously expensive, crazy good, and basically every movie that's worth anything is using camera. So that was a surprise. Nobody even knew that they were on the market at all. That they like would have expected they're just doing just fine. I mean, they're basically making money everywhere.
Yeah. But so we don't really know how this came together, which tells me this is probably a behind the scenes thing where maybe Canon approached Red and said, "Hey,
you mean Nikon? Not Canon.
Nikon.
Not Canon. Canon already has a movie camera business. So
Nikon. Yeah. See, this is why I'm not a cinematographer. so anyhow, Nikon went to them and said, "Hey, we'd like to have you as part of our company. Here's all the zeros we're putting on the end of the check."
Right. Yes. It's hard to turn down.
And it was a deal that they just couldn't resist.
Well, yeah. And the article says that they do have some history on legal fights from a couple of years ago about some firmware. Red sued Nikon a couple of years ago, but yeah, you
they're
wonder.
All friends. Well, they're all friends now, obviously.
They're all friends, yeah, clearly.
Yeah, I mean that's usually most people don't care. They're like, yeah, I mean, someone somewhere at the top might care, but most people in the company are like, whatever, let them fight. We'll do our thing.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of these people, they get that. A lot of these lawsuits that companies throw at each other over patents or trademark, copyright, whatever, it's because they're obligated to do that to protect.
Well, you have to defend. You have to defend your copyrights. But I just bring that up because sometimes, believe it or not, even something like that will initiate a relationship that might lead to an acquisition.
That's true. That is definitely true. Mm-hmm. You get talking, maybe, and then you're like, oh. I mean, I can definitely see. I mean, as I said, Canon already has a pretty healthy like movie camera business. Nikon, as far as I know, does not. So that might, I mean, and they're I would say the two biggest competitors in the market.
Right.
Like, at least in the camera market, in the wider camera market. Yeah, there's others like Sony and so on. But I think those are the two biggest names. So Nikon wanting to, yeah, stay relevant to some extent and catch up with Canon, I can totally see. And I mean, either they build it themselves or if they can, just buy it. And apparently the firmware was already in my...
There you go.
They didn't announce terms. I wonder how much they paid.
Yeah, but that's not unusual. I mean, sometimes terms will be published if they have to, but oftentimes they're not.
Oh, you definitely
don't have
don't
to tell.
It depends on, at least in the U.S., what if it's a certain percentage of your revenue.
Yeah.
If it's not material, they don't have to announce it.
Yeah, I mean, that and I think if you're like a publicly traded company, for example, you might have to. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. A
bunch of rules. I mean, Nikon is, I think, Japanese company, right?
Yeah. So
right. Maybe the rules in Japan are different. I mean, they're buying the U.S. Red is a U.S. company, U.S.-based company.
But then Red wasn't public, right?
As far as I know, no. So that might make the difference. Yeah, but I don't know. Like, but it's interesting. Like, I mean, it's also interesting. It will be interesting to see. Nikon said they want to like really expand also their business and leverage that. So it will be interesting to see like what those two companies can do together.
I'm going to be watching this closely. I mean, I'm not a cinematographer, but I've been following Red for years. When they, several years ago, were just suddenly making a big splash at CES. That's when I first encountered them, and I've been following them ever since because holy crap, the cameras they make are like amazingly good. There's a reason why so many movies are shot on Red.
Yeah.
And yeah.
There's a massive ISO rental business around there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, most cameras in the movie business are not bought. I mean, yeah, some companies might buy them because they use them all the time, but like the one-off movies, they just rent them.
Mm-hmm.
rent them for a couple of months. Their company specializes in just providing like that equipment. So yeah, and just that Red. I mean, I remember that the Epic was a big hit, especially.
Mm-hmm.
You hear them, even like YouTubers. I know MKBHD has used them a bunch. Like,
wow.
Really a big
fan. Well, Red certainly has a spot in the premium part of the cinematography market. Mm-hmm. That's a good place to be. It's a good product to buy, you know, the high end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Premium product. That's good for Nikon.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. So I guess it'll be Red by Nikon. Or Nikon Red?
That's a good question.
Nikon ZX-VHR 17 Red.
I don't know. Yeah, because the names just be that awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nikon Red, I like that.
Okay, so Tom.
What's Tom's chip story?
Chips with Tom.
I have one that is sort of chip adjacent this week. And by the way, you guys did a great job. What was it, about 3 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
when I wasn't here on the, I can't remember what the story is about, but I think Ben had the story and you guys nailed it. I was so impressed.
Yeah, we well, channeled we our inner you. Tom and everything we've learned from
you. It was great. So my story is about a newish company here called Samba Nova. They're in Silicon Valley. I know 3 or 4 people that work there, but they've kind of come out publicly and they're doing a bunch of PR. The article I linked to is E Times, which is mostly a PR distribution vehicle now. Mm-hmm. They used to be a really good magazine, but they mostly just do paid content now. But anyway, they do talk about Samba Nova, and what they are providing is basically kind of a turnkey solution for creating LLMs and a whole system. They produce chips. You know, they have a big chip design team. And that's what I knew about them up until now. I didn't realize that they were trying to develop this whole AI model system that you can basically buy. And so I don't know much about the software side of AI. So I'm hoping that maybe Patrice can help with this, with some of their angles that they're taking. But, you know, the big headline numbers are trillion parameter models. And I get that. I understand that people have learned that if you have 1,000 parameter model, it doesn't work very well. And most of the models we hear about are at least billion parameter models. And so these guys are talking about trillion parameters, but they also have an interesting take about, you know, having very domain specific models, which I get, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
the thing here is this is marketing.
Right.
It's not one model. I mean, and in AI models, bigger is not always better. That's something right. Even like OpenAI is learning quite quickly, that bigger isn't always better. A bigger model is sometimes simply more complex and harder to use and takes more time to do anything. So what the company Samba Nova is doing is actually it's 54 models, so they call right. them experts, that combined have 1.3 trillion parameters. But in reality, there's a router model in there that decides which model to use.
Right. Right. So this whole idea of composition of experts and somehow picking the right model to use in the right context seems like an interesting concept.
Or combining models together in the correct way so right. that you get the correct result. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, they create the compute power to deal with this. At least that's their pitch. But I'm just wondering if that's the way AI models are going, they're going to be more and more domain specific, and that really the most valuable technology is going to be kind of that controller that figures out where to direct the inquiry or the query to which model. Is that really going to be the secret sauce?
It has to be, because, I mean, it kind of models the world that we live in. You think about it, I mean, like back in the day, like probably hundreds and thousands of years ago, you didn't, I mean, like I would guess one human being could probably know everything that we knew back then at some point, like if you go far back enough.
Right.
But I mean, these days we have, I don't know, not a trillion, but a ton of specialists. I mean, everybody, to some extent, everybody these days is a specialist. Like you learn your whatever your trade. Like we learn, we're very good at podcasting, but if you put us in front of a TV camera, we're probably lost. I don't know, might be, even though that's maybe related. And the same thing, like you have that's this expert model. Like you have, we have those experts, and the best people figure out, I mean, they build teams. That's what companies do.
Right,
They build teams of
right.
experts that then work together, and you orchestrate and work together, and together they create something that's bigger than the individual thing. That's the whole thing. So it totally makes sense. Is it like how effective it is? I don't know, but you're right. I think the person who orchestrates that, or the model that orchestrates that and figures out how to combine the other models into something that's actually better, is probably the secret sauce. And that honestly is, in my opinion, the more general AI. It's
Yeah.
not about knowing everything, it's just about using the resources that it has to get the best result.
Well, that actually kind of mirrors how humans work. The real experts don't know everything, but they know where the resources are to get the information that they need.
Yes. I've often said I don't know everything, but I know where I can find out. And that is one of the key things. It goes along with my old bit of nonsense, which is true. Anyone tells me they know everything about everything, I don't believe them. You know, it's that thing.
So as Patrice says, this whole article is pretty much a marketing pitch, and as I mentioned ahead of time, but I found the interesting thing that AI, the industry, is maturing a little bit, and people are figuring out that just having access to 1,000 or 10,000 NVIDIA GPUs isn't going to solve your problem.
It is not. Also, ChatGPT is not going to solve the problem.
Right.
Like it's
It's
a
just too
tool. It's
general,
one
right?
of them. No, it's simply
Right.
one of the tools you need. Like it's one of the parts you need. But there's, I mean, that's what I mean. People talk about AI, and most people mean like LLMs.
Right.
There's a whole world of other types of AIs and other specialties and so on that are really useful and good.
And you're
And
probably
if you
using
combine of
today.
them, that you are, I would say 99.9% certain you're using some of that today even. You have like, and you have to combine them in a novel and good way to get to the general part, because that's, as I said, humans are by all measures pretty stupid, but we're really good at
The wedge squidgy bit
creating.
is always crap.
Yeah, but we're really good at using tools.
Yep. And I think we're still in that phase where AI is, we're still kind of confusing technology with a product that does useful things.
Yes.
And LLM is a sort of subcategory technology within AI. But what I'm interested in is products. It's great that you're using AI, but give me a product that uses AI that does something useful for me. Not,
And there are
you know,
some.
yeah, there are definitely a ton of them, but the focus seems to be the headline is AI. The headline isn't the product based on AI most of the time.
It's all about knowing the tool you're using. It should be a good tool, like TSO hosts. True.
Nice one,
And
Jeff.
why would I bring up TSO hosts? Well, that's because TSO hosts actually is a really good service, really good tools, makes it easy for you to buy domain names and do your web hosting, and you get solid, reliable service from them. And if you want proof that it works, just look at the British Tech Network, because what Tioso Host is doing is very generously giving us the bandwidth to live stream shows every single week. They're giving us the hosting space for the website, so you can go and find that and find all the episodes that you want to watch or listen to. And now you also need to have a place for those shows to live, so they're giving us that too. We get the server space that we need to host all this file, so you actually can watch or listen at your leisure. The resources it takes to do all this is kind of crazy. And it goes beyond what we would be able to manage to bring together at the BTN on our own. So what they're doing is very generously giving us those resources so we can be here for you every single week. And when I say thank you, TSO Host, we wouldn't be here without you. There's no hyperbole there. That's it. Just thank you, TSO Host, because we wouldn't be here without your generous help. And now you can thank them as well. And to do that, just go out on social media, please, and let TSO Host know that you appreciate that they are here supporting the British Tech Network. Super easy, super fast. That's all you need to do. But now that we know they offer great services, if you do need to buy a domain name, you need to get web hosting, whatever, why not use them? Because they're going to give you good service at a good price, and they're great to work with. So go find that domain name you need, throw it in your cart. If you decide you want to have a website to go with it, toss the hosting package in there too, whatever. Then add the discount code BTN20 so you get 20% off your order. So TSO Host is incredibly generous because they're here giving back to the community and supporting us so we can bring shows to you every week. And they're being incredibly generous because they're offering you a 20% discount just because you're part of the BTN family. So thank you again, TSO Host, for being here and supporting us. And speaking of support, any week that Patrice is out, like last week, you get to see why I just immediately lean on her to get help with explaining the chat. Patrice, do you mind?
I don't mind at all. But by the way, last week was really good. I listened to it on Friday, and the domains were correct, and the points were like four there, so no, not bad.
Wow, go me!
It was yeah, you're learning it very slowly.
It's only taking years.
So yeah, we have a really cool live chat that we're all joining. I mean, it's all there. It's there 24/7, but we're usually joining it when we're recording this show, which we are doing every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show. And if you're into the non-Apple side, into the Apple side of things, we have the Mac show, Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time. Showtimes do change here and there, so keep an eye on our social media or our website or Slack or something, because we'll post that there. And when we're recording, head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And you can see everything that we posted. And there's the links to the articles that we're talking about, some bonus content, especially today. I posted two articles even. One I mentioned and another one that I found just a minute ago because someone sent it to me, and that was really interesting. So if you want to know about WhatsApp, Facebook, and two-factor codes, then, you could just Google it, but you could also just head over to our chat. But, you would have to do that right now, so I don't know. Probably won't hear this. But if you want to see that still and you're not in the live chat and you're hearing this too late, because you're hearing this in the recorded form in our on our website, in your favorite podcast player of choice, on YouTube Music or whatever, wherever you're hearing this, we can still you can still get to the content. You can still get to the links. You can still see the cool things that are coming up, all of that. And all you have to do is you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then the friendly little calendar on the page asks you for a date, and you give it a date. And any date between, June 2nd, 2015, and today, and today's date would be March 7th, 2027. I almost said 2024. March 7th, 2024. If you put that in, you will see the transcript for that date. So if you put in March 7th, you will see what we talked about today.
Awesome. And Patrice, thank you for saying that I did so much better last week.
You did.
Still not nearly as good as you.
Well, I have maybe a couple of years more experience. I don't know.
Well, you do. So I have goals now. And that means now it's time for cool things. So looks like, Tom, you have the first cool thing.
Okay. My cool thing is a podcast. It's three episodes of a podcast called Freakonomics.
Mm-hmm.
Freakonomics is a podcast done by the guy who wrote one of the guys who wrote the book Freakonomics a few years ago. But the three episodes that I think are this week's cool thing is about Richard Feynman.
Oh, and, I love Feynman.
Nice.
Yeah. So Richard Feynman was an American physicist. He died in the late 80s. He won the Nobel Prize in the early 60s, I think it was, for quantum mechanics, I think. He was also the guy that was on the Challenger's investigation committee, and he was the one that showed dunking an O-ring into a bowl of ice water and how it froze up and or got stiffened, you know, stiffened up and broke. You might remember him for that. Mm-hmm. But he was a very interesting guy, you know, good and bad. But Freakonomics did a really good job in these three episodes of kind of going through his history, both his personal life and professional life. And if you're interested in Richard Feynman at all, I highly recommend it.
I'm on Audible. There's a load of stuff by him I listened to. Surely you're joking, Mr. Feynman,
right?
Not that long ago. And that's just that's him talking about Challenger and a few other things. And it's just brilliant. He is mad, eccentric. One of my heroes in terms of science and tech and things.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to check it out. That sounds great. So cool. All right. Then Ian, looks like you have the next cool thing.
Yeah, it's another, and actually I'll throw another one in here to add to this same idea of suite of tools that are handy to have. It's just two little drawing tools that you can grab straight online. They don't need any client installing. They don't need anything downloading. You can open them up and you can whiteboard straight away in your web browser window. And they're dead handy. I mean, I use Excalidraw for creating little diagrams for networks and things. You can add the little libraries button in Excalidraw, which you can go and find the various symbols and things that help as well. So you can drag on little objects, arrows and other stuff. They're just really handy little tools to have. And it's completely free. It sits in your web browser. There are paid options. TLDraw, the other one I've put in, is completely and utterly free and is open source. Excalidraw does have a paid level if you want to go there. But for most of what most folk do, you don't need to. It's brilliant. And again, another tool. And there's another one, Draw.io, for the triumvirate of these kind of handy little drawing tools. I mean, I have a Wacom tablet. And when I do some of my training classes and I like to draw and diagram stuff out, these things are invaluable.
You like to whack people.
Absolutely. Big old stick. Big old stick. I want a cattle prod. But so yes.
Where do your drawings live?
Locally. You can save them on the Excalidraw one. Oh. There's a save option and it will save it locally to your machine and then you just pull it back up into the machine. It has its own proprietary file format that pulls it back in, but you just do file open. With TLDraw, again, you save a copy and that will save it down to your local machine.
Okay.
Gives you an option. They come in their own, they save in their own format, but that's fine because you just go back to the web page and open it again.
Sure. And
so you're not storing anything in the cloud.
Your content locally, that makes these much more compelling. I mean, they're cool, but now even cooler.
Yeah. You just hit the hamburger menu, and you've got an option there, save to.
Yeah, that's really nice.
And save to disk, a shareable link. If you pay for the premium feature, you can do that. It's just a really, you can export it as an image. If all you need is a screen grab of the thing you've created, export image. And there's some nice things it will do, various bits and pieces to help you make it look nice.
Very cool.
Good pick.
Yeah, The only thing with Excalibur, if I'm to give it, it does look sometimes a bit cheesy when you use it in a business context, because it's very much designed to look like you've drawn it.
Okay.
So it uses fonts that are very much like handwriting. The edges of the things are kind of given that drawn feel, which is which again I don't mind for when I'm doing diagramming. But some people might find that the TL drawer again is more solid. But again, that's great for what they are. If you've got a pen, if you've got like a Wacom pen or whatever, you can use it on your iPad. Same idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sitting here doing some basic drawing using my trackball.
Yeah.
And I see what you mean about what it does with the lines. But that's also, I mean, if you want something that looks more like you drew it, well, yeah, there you go. That's what it's doing. So
cool. Yeah, if you need like an engineering diagram, you wouldn't use this tool, but
that's not what it's for, but it's a handy little thing to have in the bag of useful tricks.
Yeah, it's cool.
Cool. All right. Well, we're on a roll with cool stuff. And yes. Patrice, I just clicked your link and that
that's really cool.
We're still keeping the coolness happening.
Okay. Good. So there is this guy called, like, his name is Will Wheaton. You, like, some people might have heard of him. Like, he was somewhat famous in the 80s, like did like a not so known movie called Stand By Me, or like some weird sci-fi show that nobody's ever heard of, like, called the Star Trek Next Generation. Did not a lot after that, and like last 10-ish years came back, and now is kind of the face of the fan base and of the family of Star Trek now with the new Star Trek shows. But he also does a ton of other things since. He's some people might know him from the blog he wrote in the early 2000s, or a book that he published in 2004, I think, called Just a Geek. And he, I think last year, no, year and a half ago, he published a very unique book. It's titled Still Just a Geek, an annotated memoir by Will Wheaton. And he basically took his 2004 book that was actually about that was a summary and commentary on the blog post he had written from, I think, the early 2000s onwards, and annotated them again and commented on them from like 20-ish years later, Will, and his perspective on it and the horrible things. I mean, he is not kind to himself in some cases. Sometimes he is. Here and there, he's like, okay, I understand. Back then, you just didn't know any better. But he does not, like, he's not kind. Sometimes he's like, yeah, nope, nope, nope. That's like, nope. That was never okay. That's not okay today. Like homophobic stuff. Nope, nope. Stuff like that. And he's like, he wrote this book like with a ton of footnotes and long stories in it, and like updated and like what happened afterwards, and like the stuff he didn't realize back then, like going really deep on, yeah, PTSD and psychological things and so on, like on his life really and what happened and what was going on and what he was struggling with is like his parents that were really, I mean, in hindsight he realized were abusive, but he just didn't know. And stuff like that. And he basically annotated that and published that as a new book with half of the book is basically the annotations, the original book with annotations. And the other half of the book is stuff he's written since and comments on that, like the stuff he's written and comments on that. So it's a really good book. The audio version is 23 hours.
Wow.
And it is read by him. He has I think the introduction is by Neil Gaiman, who in 2004 did that for himself. And he like came back for this book basically again. And
that's cool.
Did it. It's really cool. It is it's not the typical. I mean, in the approach, it's not a typical book anyway. And he sets it up in the beginning. He says, look, this is kind of, we're sitting together. I am reading the book to you and then commenting on it. That's kind of what he's going for. And I mean, he's done, like, he's a really good, like, audiobook Like,
yeah, his voice like, work is always excellent.
Voiceover, like, awesome. I love all these books he's done. Like, I'm a big fan of his, especially audiobooks. Like, they're so good. This book, it is moving. I cried a bunch. I saw so much that I've struggled with, in like what he also struggled with. I mean, despite we're coming from completely different like places, it's super relatable. It's funny at points. It just has everything, and it's 23 hours, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like you're with a friend and you're just spending some time together, and yeah, as I said, like going through some stuff and figuring things out and so on. And it shows a person. It's not the movie star or TV show star or whatever. It's like a real person with real life struggles. And it's not about, oh, I did this movie with that person, whatever. It's barely mentioned. I mean, here and there he does talk about like something that he really enjoyed and didn't enjoy and so on, and some experiences he's had. But it's more about him and his relationships with other people and so on. It's just a really great book. It's probably my number one favorite book now. Huh. It's that good. And he said he's probably going to wait another 20 years and then do, I don't know, yet still Just a Geek or something like that. Because, I mean, it just shows like our, like, it's really interesting because you get three perspectives. You get a little bit the 80s, 90s perspective. You get for sure the 2000s with all this blog posts and the book he wrote. And then you get the 2021, 2022, which is also the middle of the pandemic perspective. And there you see that we've, as a society, we've changed. Mm-hmm. And I think the audiobook was recorded in 2023, I think. And he did little annotations in the audiobook that are not in the written book because he was like, yeah, I mean, stuff happened since. So, and he got the chance to even update that. So he's like, yeah, I'm not going to overdo it, but I'm here and there. I'm going to use this tool because I can, because I'm producing this and I'm reading this. And if I want to comment, then I'll comment. So it's
he's certainly so qualified if he does to it, comment on his life.
I think he's probably the only person who is qualified to comment on his life. So, as I said, it is a really interesting, really, really interesting book. And I mean, we get the F. William Shatner story. So that was in the original book, by the way. So that's not a new thing. But yeah, if you have never heard that, now you can. So highly recommend it. And it's like, I mean, I use it, I bought it on or get it on Libro, which is my favorite audiobook thing. And it's like, you can buy it for like $30 or just one credit. But I'm pretty sure you can find it anywhere. If you want, buy it in print. Like it for some people, I think it is sometimes harder to follow in audio because footnotes are harder to understand sometimes. Where's the difference between? And he tried his best to make it obvious, but it's not always. It's a conversation, so like footnotes simply sometimes work better when they're written.
Yep. All right. So, man, I'm not sure if I can match up with the stuff that all of you brought, but I'll try. OWC, they're known for making really good computer accessories, docks, stuff like that, and I just picked up their Thunderbolt 3 14 port dock. And this is not a new product. It's been out for a couple years. But anyhow, so you have micro SD and SD slots on it, audio in and out, like regular headphone jack. I want to say there's like five USB-A ports. There's a couple USB-C ports. There's Thunderbolt ports. Display port out. It has a Toslink for digital audio out. Anyhow, so it has tons of ports, and it'll do 85 watt charging over the Thunderbolt port,
which is pretty good.
Yeah. And I bought this to replace my CalDigit Thunderbolt 3 dock, which is still a really great dock. It just was very limited in ports, and I needed more than my dock could handle for ports. Me. I needed more ports.
So could I use this on a Windows machine?
Sure.
Yeah, it's just Thunderbolt. So any just machine that can do a Thunderbolt can do it.
You know, I've had a heck of a time. I need a new docking station. I've had a heck of a time finding a good combination of SD and USB and HDMI ports. This one looks good.
Mm-hmm. And so this one, it's a $279 dock, but they're selling them for $99.
Yeah.
Right now.
Which is a steal. I mean, for the dock especially.
Right. I mean, for everything it has, $99. It's like, I don't know how they're making money on the dock.
And what's the difference between this one and the $149 one?
The $149 one comes with a with an adapter. So wait, what is the difference? Because I had only looked at the photo. What is it?
The 149 is a Thunderbolt 2. So the this is actually the older one. Like that's the regular price, the 279. It would usually the Thunderbolt 3 would be more expensive, but it's the Thunderbolt 2 one, which has a different cable still.
And it's older and more expensive, so you wouldn't
buy
that one.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, for sure. Yeah. I mean, in fact, regular price, the Thunderbolt 3 one would be more expensive, but they're on sale. It's not super obvious on the page, to be honest.
But that's really cheap for Thunderbolt 3 with all these ports.
It is. And for the most part, I mean, there is Thunderbolt 4 out there, but for the most part, it doesn't matter because for docks like this, there's no benefit in Thunderbolt 4.
Yeah. And now, so the video output, it's DisplayPort. It's actually mini DisplayPort.
Yeah, which is better. By the way,
But if you wanted to do HDMI, just get a USB-C to HDMI adapter, and you're done.
Yep.
And I looked in the UK, and I can only buy this for 230 quid.
Too bad.
Unless I buy it from the States, and it'll probably cost me the same amount by the time it gets shipped, and I get taxed.
I actually might have that exact dock somewhere here in. Like in my office, because I got that a couple of years ago for my, I don't know if it's the Thunderbolt 2 or 3. I think it's the 3 for work, and I've not used it since pandemic. So
I wonder why they're selling them so cheap.
I'm guessing they're going to bring out a new version.
That's my assumption too.
Yeah, Thunderbolt 4 or 5 even maybe. Don't know if they have a 4, but 5 is on the horizon. So it's
Jeff, I think you cost me $100 today.
You know, I'm not going to apologize because
it's a great deal.
It's a great deal, and OWC makes really good products. And it's one of those things where it popped up. Someone was on Mastodon asking about docs or something, and then they got a reply back from someone else saying, "Here's a really great doc." And right now it's on sale, and I'm like, holy crap, an OWC dock on sale. And I click the link and I see it's this, and I had to like read the whole page twice because I was certain I was completely misinterpreting something.
Right.
How could I be buying this dock for $99? And as soon as I was like, nope, I'm reading it right. Man, I smashed a buy button so hard.
Yeah, they already have a bigger version. I checked, like this $250 one. So I'm guessing they're going to release the Thunderbolt 5 version. So
that would make sense. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, the worst part about swapping out my my CalDigit with this one was getting wires where they needed to go.
Yeah, because you have to rewire everything again because anyway, probably.
I've had that this week with the changing back to Windows and finding all the relevant wires. I do need a better dock than the thing I've got here. The Thunderbolt one from Lenovo is shite. Is absolute shite.
Oh yes, same for Dell.
And the and I've got an Amazon GP here, which is all right. But if I plug the Ethernet cable in, it can't cope without that and driving two monitors and everything else. It's just hopeless. So we're going to have a rethink, I think, on that one.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, I'm feeling better about holding up my end of the coolness
for yes, cool things. Did a good job.
Since
yes.
I just spent $100 of Tom's money.
Yes.
Yeah. And Tom, I really am happy with this dock. Now, granted, I've had it set up for 24 hours now?
Right.
Less than that, because Patrice, I set this up after we were chatting yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's definitely less than 24 hours.
Less than 24 hours. And Tom, another thing I like about this one, you know how a lot of docks, they put a stupid bright light on the front?
Right.
The lights for this are actually on the bottom, just back from the edge. So what I have instead of this bright light on the front is this little blue light glowing out very subtly from underneath.
It's just good.
Yeah, I hate devices that have, you know, it's like a Christmas tree when you walk into a room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, like Patrice's background. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing how I ended up buying one of those sheets of semi-opaque stickers off of Amazon just to cover up LEDs on
devices.
And that's what they're for.
We have black electrical tape all over.
That's
what I do. Black electrical tape.
I have gaffer's tape.
Completely.
Yes. I hate them. Especially in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Like I have my charging brick and it has a blue, bright blue light. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's stupid. I don't know why they do that, but here we are. Anyhow, well, with that, it's time to wrap up. So thank you to all three of you for just being so wonderfully awesome. I'm really, really happy that I get to spend part of my Thursday with all of you. Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me. Oh, where's my finger gone? There we go.
There you go.
I'm Ian Grant. You can't see my company logo. Doesn't really matter. I'm on LinkedIn most of the time. That's the best place to find me. I work for Veeam. I'm a trainer for them. If you don't look there, have a look in the Slack room at BTN. And those are the usually easiest places to find me. I don't do too much of the way of socials. But those are where I am.
Awesome. Tom, when you're not jet setting around the world, where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social. And it's really great to be back. I really missed the time I was off. Thank you, everybody.
Well, I'm glad you're back too. And not just because there's someone to help with the whole workflow for publishing and
posting
shows
flows. Oh, yeah, by the way, I can post shows today, Jeff.
Oh, thank you.
And tomorrow.
But seriously, just because you're cool and it's great to have you around.
Thank you.
And now we'll wrap up the coolness with Patrice. Where can people find you?
You can find me every week here on the Big Show on Thursdays and also on the Mac Show on Fridays. As I said, if you're into the Apple side of things, that's your show, the Mac Show. I'm also doing a lot of other things. So if you want to know about that, head over to my website, thepatrice.com, with all the social media links, the podcast, the projects, literally everything. And if you want to join Mastodon and enjoy the really cool community that we have on there, I have my own instance at techhangout.social. And if you know me, reach out to me or to Ben or to Jeff, one of the other people, and you'll get an invite. It's invite only.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So then for me, social media, I'm Jay Gamet on pretty much everything. I am active on Mastodon, Instagram, and Threads. And then for shows, Tuesdays, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Thursdays, Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS. Here on the British Tech Network, Big Show on Thursdays, Mac Show on Fridays. And then also, Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine. And with that, thank you again to the three of you for just being so wonderfully awesome. And I'm genuinely happy that I get to spend time with all of you. And everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the chat, thank you to all of you for being here and being part of the show. Everyone that watches or listens to the show recordings later on, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. And then TSO hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love, people, and then use that discount code BTN20 to get some little money off on your orders. And also, speaking of money, the Daily News Show. 5 minutes of all the tech news that you need waiting for you in the morning. And why did I say money? Because it does take extra money to keep that show running. Kyle does an amazing job with the show. So check out the show. You are going to love it if you aren't loving it already. And then click the button on the BTN website to send in money to keep that show going. Okay. And with that, hey, Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And I think that about wraps it up. So don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the Mac Show. And then tune in again next week on Thursday for the Big Show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.